In Northwest News on KPLU, if you ever drive through Seattle area traffic, maybe when a truck of salmon overturns and shuts down Highway 99, you may have had some version of this thought. I wish my car had wings right now. Back in the 1950s, it seemed inevitable that someday we'd all have flying cars. Obviously, that hasn't happened, but we actually came a lot closer to getting them than you might think. That's thanks to a Washington man named Molt Taylor and his aero car. Jake Schultz wrote a book about Taylor called A Drive in the Clouds. He joined KPLU's Gabriel Spitzer on our show Sound Effect to talk about the flying car that almost was.
The aero car was intended to make an airplane more practical, not necessarily make a car that would fly, but make an airplane that people would use more often than a traditional airplane. When we would go for a drive, we would drive past the airport, and he would point at the small Cessnas and Pipers and such that were all parked in the ramp, and he would say, look at those airplanes. They're all just sitting there. He goes, and not one of them will drive to the store.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I mean, it's less a flying car and more of a driving airplane, it seems.
Correct,
like.
Yeah.
So it's important to make that distinction that it's not exactly Jetsons-like in the sense that you can't just be driving and then take off on I-5 and
correct.
Land somewhere else. You drive to an airstrip or an airport, you put it together, and then you fly, and then you take it apart and drive away from there.
Correct.
So what was Molt Taylor's vision for this thing?
So Molt Taylor and his wife Lillian lived in Longview, Washington. And one of the examples they give is that there was not a freeway system yet in the early 50s. They were building it, but it was not in place yet. And so Molt would like to come up to the Seafair races. And what he and his wife would do is they would get in the aero car from their house, drive out to the airport, put on the wings, fly up to Seattle, land at Boeing Field, and leave the wings at Boeing Field and take the little car, drive down to the boat races, watch the hydroplane races. And then at the end of the day, get back to the airport and fly home to Longview. And when everyone else who is trying to do that from Longview is taking essentially side roads and rural roads, this was a vastly quicker way to get around. And he envisioned that kind of travel where people would travel further than they would normally travel in just an automobile because you had the ability to fly.
We think of the flying car as such this symbol of, you know, maybe mid-century vision of the future, right? Did Molt see it that way? I mean, did he get caught up in that or was it something different for him?
He never had any problem at all envisioning a world that didn't exist yet, but he would see them as clear as, oh, that's exactly how it could be in the future at some point.
He gets to that in this really interesting document that you found, I gather, on a pad of yellow legal paper. It was sort of notes to himself, and you print it in your book, A Drive in the Clouds. And I wonder if I could ask you to read a little piece of it. This is from the final
sure.
paragraph of something that he wrote in, was it 1945?
1945, yeah. From the foregoing, one can see that what we really need to do to get that flying automobile is not just dreaming, but to get busy and build one. We don't need a lot of complicated stuff, just a common sense gadget that will provide a usable, practical little automobile, and at the same time unfold into a safe, convenient airplane that you can drive over the flying strip and fly to that other strip near Joe's place. That way we can avoid the traffic. Mary can have her car to go to the bridge party tomorrow. You can have that airplane. There won't be any hangar bill, and those dreams will come true a lot sooner than most of us expected.
It seems like from what he wrote, he saw it so clearly, and he saw the barriers as being so surmountable. They were really just, you know, it was an engineer's point of view, right? We can easily just kind of make something that does these four things that we needed to do, and there you go. You got your flying car. Why aren't we all driving these things now? What has prevented the aero car from taking off?
So they actually set up a deal in 1961 to produce 1,000 aero cars. And the deal was set up in such a way that they had to have $1,000 down on at least 500 of the orders, and then they were going to launch production. And they only got about 270, roughly, and then they just couldn't get any more orders. You had to put $1,000 down for each car, and you weren't even going to get it till you're number 271. So you're not going to get your flying car for quite a few years. It isn't even in production yet. And so they never got enough to really to seal the deal.
Imagine if Molt Taylor had Kickstarter.
Exactly.
I'm kind of frustrated that such mundane stuff did it in, right? You know, the financing and those new auto regulations. They both seem like such surmountable obstacles.
It is, and that's why there are still people working on the dream. There's a gentleman named Stefan who's done the aeromobile. It's flying over in Europe. There's the Terrafugia folks from MIT. There have been over 100 flying car designs over the years that have at least gotten to the point of, here's this thing in my garage that in some cases flies, other cases it never got past a mock-up. But there have been a lot of designs. There have been a lot of patents. And I liken it a little bit to the jet ski because prior to the Kawasaki jet ski, there were a whole bunch of small watercraft, and Popular Mechanics would have a cover, you know, build your own water scooter, and you'd have a sheet of plywood and a little motor and such. And there were a lot of different vehicles, but there was nothing really in production until the Kawasaki did the jet ski. And all of a sudden, they hit something that was popular enough and had enough of a market, and they made a lot of them. And then there were derivatives of those, and there were other variations, and now there's an entire category of personal watercraft. I think flying cars are going to be the same kind of thing. Somebody is going to put enough of the pieces together to make it an interesting and useful vehicle. But there will be flying cars that people will be able to buy that will be a fairly useful vehicle and a fairly useful vehicle as an aircraft. It doesn't have to be better at both. That's the misconception. You know, a Winnebago is a lousy thing to commute in, and a little Volkswagen Bug would be a lousy thing to try to camp with four people. But each of those vehicles does what it needs to do well enough to justify its existence. I think in a flying car would be the same thing. It doesn't have to be a better airplane than an airplane or a better car than a regular car. It has to do both of those well enough to justify its existence.
Jake Schultz is a Boeing analyst and the author of A Drive in the Clouds, The Story of the Aero Car. If you want to see a real-life aero car, there are actually a few on display around here. You can go see one at MOHAI or at the Museum of Flight.
That's KPLU's Gabriel Spitzer. That story first appeared on our show Sound Effect. It airs Saturday mornings at 10.